You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light. Detroit made, Bible strong. Well, 3 days after the September 11th, 2012 attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya, another attack occurred on a massive forward operating base called Camp Bastion in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, home to U.S. and U.K. expeditionary forces. Why didn't we hear about this? What are the implications? What was the aftermath? What happened? Well, my next guest writes about it. She is an award-winning military journalist as well as a military documentary filmmaker and the author of the brand new book, Triumph Over the Taliban, the untold story of U.S. Marines' courageous fight to save Camp Bastion. I want to welcome to the show Jeannie McKinney. Jeannie, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Chris.
Well, it looks like a very exciting read, Jeannie. And if you didn't think it was nonfiction, you'd think it was fiction. But this is a real story, isn't it?
Absolutely a real story. It was exciting for me to write.
And I know you're a prolific writer. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, when I first heard about it, I was asking that question. Why isn't this being talked about? Because we were really embroiled in that whole narrative about Benghazi and what caused it and, you know, reeling from that.
Yeah, and probably a lot of, I'll just say it, Jeannie, lies that were told about what actually happened. And this throws into context the whole war in Afghanistan. And now you've got a lot of people who are saying, now, wait a minute. Was it really necessary to be there under the conditions we thought we needed to be there? I mean, it was the longest war in American history, was it not? And what can we learn from this?
Well, we absolutely learned the cost of freedom through our battles. And the war on terror is full of amazing battles. The battles that were won and which didn't unfortunately add up to the greater war winning at the end the way it was handled. But there were a lot of smaller battles won throughout those 20 years, and we saw the greatest acts of mankind on those battlefields. And in a biblical sense, we can refer that to John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. We see that throughout history on America's battlefields.
Well, and go ahead, Jeannie.
Oh, no. Well, I was just going to say, and for me personally, and I think for a lot of folks, that inspires us to get through our own daily challenges and be better and do better.
Jeannie, so you served in the military?
No, I did not, but I have three brothers who did.
Oh, and thank God for their service to our country. I feel like you have because you've covered the stories for so many readers on combat missions throughout Afghanistan, Iraq, Africa, Syria. I mean, in writing about this, you probably almost feel like you're experiencing it firsthand.
Well, I feel like, well, that's been my mission, to help Americans experience what it's really like to go to war, to be over there and putting yourself on the line, risking your life. You know, we go about our lives every day and we don't have to think about that because they're over there doing the job. And so I had this idea about 13 years ago to start writing about these folks. Kind of the bin Laden assassination was the turning point for me because I saw a whole bunch of news coverage about SEAL Team 6. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of men and women out there in uniform doing these same types of heroic acts. And we don't know who they are. We just hear, you know, such and such happened. But we don't have a personal connection to these people. So that's why I started writing about them.
I'm glad you did. My heart and respect and dignity and honor and gratitude goes out to all of our men and women in uniform who have served our great country, who have put themselves in harm's way in the name of freedom. life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which comes at such a price. It just breaks my heart, Jeannie, that there are young people today, and I'm not pointing fingers, that maybe they just haven't been educated properly, who do not understand the gift of being an American, what that means, and the fact that in this constitutional republic, it was bought at a price by those who served in our armed forces. Want to get to, am I saying it right, the Battle of Camp Bastion?
Yes, you
okay.
Are.
I almost want to go French on you and go Bastion, but I won't. That's the French in me because I am Portuguese and French. We'll get to that battle in a moment, but I think a lot of people are still confused, Jeannie, by what happened in Benghazi on September 11th, 2012. Remind us.
Well, insurgents assaulted the diplomatic compound over there and killed four Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens and two security contractors, and then an IT specialist. And it was a very volatile area. I mean, it was dangerous just to be there. And so I don't know why the government did this, but they made up a story about an anti-Islamic video for the reason for the attack, when it was not that. It was, a mobilized, militarized force that launched an assault of an arm of Al-Qaeda that launched an assault on the compound and then consequently on the secret CIA facility. So it happened because we let our guard down.
Yeah. How many Americans' lives were taken?
There were four lives taken.
And were we lied to by the Obama administration in terms of what happened?
In my opinion, absolutely. I mean, it's been proven since in congressional testimony, committee meetings, that, yeah, we were lied to.
Why do you think we were lied to? And it was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the time.
I don't know why the government lies, because it really doesn't serve them any purpose, because eventually truth finds a way to reveal itself. And I guess they do it because they can, and they don't suffer any consequences for it.
Boy, isn't that the truth, Jeannie, right there. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And doesn't make it any more right. But to your point, I believe the truth always prevails. The evil or the corruption or the lies will be exposed. And I appreciate the fact that many in America today are waking up, and maybe with time permitting, we'll talk a little bit about the backdrop of these anti-Israel protests that are happening at college campuses. But let's get back to the context of this story, because you get into detail following what occurred in the attack in Benghazi some 3 days later, which was another attack on Camp Bastion in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. Tell us about that.
Well, it was not unsimilar to Benghazi. It was a surprise attack and caught people unaware. But there's a lot of backstory behind that being off guard that wasn't really in our control, because two major foreign forces occupied that base. And then other countries' forces would come and go. Over the course of the war, there were like 50 different countries that served in Afghanistan under the ISAF mission. And so they were in and out, right? But the two major camps were U.S. and British. So they were caught off guard on that night. It was night. It was dark. It was like an unusually dark night where there was really no moon. And the Taliban had been planning this assault for months. It wasn't something sudden. And they just uncharacteristically stormed the base. They just cut the wire. I can explain some of the security issues as we go along. But there was this base was 40 square miles with 25 miles of fence line. So a lot of geography to cover, right, to protect. And the airfield was on the eastern side, and all that was between open ground and the airfield was this chain link perimeter fence, and then they had some guard towers that were set back, and then here's where the Marines were all housed, the U.S. Marines on the British airfield. And so they made this uncharacteristic move to go inside the base and face these Marines head on. It was really a suicide mission for the Taliban. They had to know that, but they did it anyway. And normally they're hiding. They've been dubbed the ghost enemy for years because they hide in the population. Our troops would go over there, and it was difficult for them because it was a totally different kind of warfare than from World War I or World War II, where your enemy wore a uniform. These people would just blend in. This enemy would blend in with the population and use them as shields. And so our guys and gals had a really hard time fleshing them out. But so they would shoot from murder holes. I don't know if you know what a murder hole is, but it's a little hole. There's zillions of mud compounds over there where they live. And they would cut these little holes out and then shoot at our guys. And then, of course, the IED threat was prolific over there.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't their mode to go face-to-face, head-on with Marines. But they had this vengeance mission to go in and kill Marines and destroy aircraft. And we know that because one survived and he was interrogated after, and he told investigators why they did it or what their plan was.
And we weren't told because?
We weren't told because of a complex cover-up that the book gets into, which is interesting because when I first heard about, you know, the story, I heard it from a Marine Cobra pilot that I had interviewed a few years back. And he started talking about, hey, you should really check into this Camp Ashton battle if you want a great story. And here, I'll introduce you to a couple of people that were there. So he did that. And then I started interviewing these people, which grew over the years to be about 13 different Marines that were directly engaged with the Taliban in that fight. And then I, being the researcher that I am, I said, well, why didn't we hear about it? And why did two Marine Corps generals, why were they forced to retire? You know, that just didn't add up to me. The Taliban attacked the base. Two Marines were killed in that assault. And so I had to get to the bottom of it. I didn't originally intend to go looking for a cover-up, but then I found one. And I said, I cannot tell this whole story unless I tell what happened here.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of what I call skullduggery about what the security environment was before the attack and then what happened post-attack, not to mention during the attack. But because of the cover-up, I think they just wanted that to go away. They were already fielding so much blowback from Benghazi that they didn't need anything else. It was an election year for Obama, 2 months out from those attacks. He was on the ballot to be reelected. And, you know, they don't want this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it was an embarrassment for that administration. And, you know, there was definitely fault there. And when we come back, we'll talk about the cover-up. We'll talk about the implications. We'll talk about the Taliban vis-a-vis under the Trump administration and now under the Biden administration and what they look like and how this all ties into our Christian faith in this religious war that seems to continue in many different forms in that region. Our guest is Jeannie McKinney. She is a prolific writer, award-winning military journalist, and the author of the book Triumph Over the Taliban. And the publisher is Patriot Profiles. You can also learn more at their website, patriotprofiles.com. You can follow Jeannie on Facebook at jeannie.mckinney.507 or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Jeannie McKinney. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made Bible strong. I see you. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made, Bible strong. Thank you so much for spending your Thursday evening with us. I hope you've had a great week so far. Almost Friday, just ahead of us here. And our theme tonight, do not fear. Our guest this hour is author Jeannie McKinney, who has out a brand new book called Triumph Over the Taliban, which tells the untold story of U.S. Marines' courageous fight to save Camp Bastion. And Jeannie, that was some 3 days after the attack on Benghazi. So these were U.S. and U.K. forces, Brits as well?
In the fight itself?
Yeah. That were attacked and killed.
It was Marines.
Yeah.
It was Marines.
Okay.
Yes.
And, I mean, who's to blame for the attack on Camp Bastion?
Well, that's a loaded question, and it's a good one. But it's a bit layered, but I'll try to give a simple answer. So, first of all, the blame overshadowed the battle. And I'd really like to say a little bit about the battle before we go off the air. But
yeah, no, go ahead, Jeannie. You know me. I'm always skipping ahead, Jeannie.
Okay.
Back of the book. I need to stay with you here. Forgive me.
Well, I just want to bring up a couple points about, you know, we're talking about Christianity and war. How do we do that? Right?
Yeah.
I believe we see, like I mentioned before, that we see the greatest acts of mankind on our battlefields.
Mm-hmm.
And then your last guest, I caught the end of it, and he was talking about, you know, in his prayer being empowered, getting power from God and strength and sound mind and love. And all of that comes to play in our warfighters.
Yeah.
They can't go out and face these types of enemies without that. I've seen the greatest brotherly love that I can't even put a word to between these guys and gals. It's just uncanny how strong that bond is. But that night, it doesn't matter when you're facing a common enemy what your differences are. It doesn't even matter if you like each other. It doesn't matter your race, religion, or your ethnicity. You are out for one mission. And that night, these Marines, which were aviation Marines, but they acted like infantry because of the security situation. We'll get into that. But they acted like infantry because Marines are the only service, U.S. service, that make everybody train on the rifle range. So whether you were a mechanic or you were in logistics or you were, you know, a crew member on an aircraft, they were picking up their rifles and defending that base. And they did so because it was a surprise. They first had to come to grips. There's somebody on base and they're blowing stuff up, right? They're blowing up Harrier jets. And they all thought at first it was a controlled debt, which is mean when they confiscate enemy ordnance, they blow it up and get rid of it so the enemy can't find it or get their hands on it. But they soon found out that they were being invaded. The enemy had, you know, breached the airfield and started this amazing mobilization machine. Think of an anthill, right? And you've got ants scattered all over the place and trying to come together, they did come together in this amazing fashion, like gears ticking on a clock on a machine. And started to do what Marines are trained to do, and their actions and their leadership and their courage was just off the charts that night. Because number one, think of this: they didn't know how many of the enemy were on base. It could have been 5 or 50. It was extremely dark; nobody could really see anything. And then the enemy was all scattered in among what we call friendlies, which was them. So in order to find the enemy, it was very difficult to find them because they were scattered about. They didn't know where they were. They could only tell where they were by the directions of the ammunition that was coming out of the enemy's weapons. that's how they determined where they were when they finally got some aircraft up, is watching the tracers. And they said, okay, well, our guys are not going to be shooting at our guys. That has to be where they are, that kind of thing, right? And so it was just this tactical, sound mind that just kicked into gear. And, you know, there were just so many heroic moments that night that didn't get told or recognized properly because of this blame game. And it was, to me, just a crying shame that these Marines, this should have been all over the news, mm-hmm. you know, what they did that night. They saved hundreds of lives and millions in equipment that night, and all the press or these top officials in Washington could talk about was who to blame. And then who they blamed wasn't even the right people. There was really no one person or thing to blame. It was a combination of things. And it definitely wasn't our two Marine Corps generals that had, each had, between the two of them, they have like 76 years of, or yeah, about 76 years of service between them. And they were sacrificed for political purposes that I can't really prove. I can speculate theories of why they did it, but only they know why they did it and why they lied about our generals. And now the world's going to know the truth.
And that's all written in your story, so they will know the truth.
What are some of the
lessons we take away from this? I mean, other than we know the government covers things up, we don't always know why. There are agendas, there are motives, there are, I suppose, reputations that are trying to be spared. But there's also the threat of the enemies that we have in the form of the Taliban. And I'm trying to understand, what strength do they have now? Has it grown since this time under the Trump administration? I know he was putting a cap on their control and their influence. Now it doesn't seem to be the same under this current administration.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, Chris, because it's not. This all started with President Bush, right? 9/11, we're going after the guys that did this to us, which I thought was the right thing to do. I mean, this country at that time wouldn't have stood for anything less than to go get those guys. And we spent 11 years trying to get bin Laden. Maybe it was 10 years. He was assassinated in 2011. It was more like 10. But the Taliban, it's kind of a long story, how the Taliban even came to be versus Al-Qaeda and all of their other buddies, which they're all different, but they all have this same ideology of this one state religious government that the world should embrace, right? And we should all submit to their ideas or brand of Islam. And that completely goes against Christianity and most religions that believe we get to choose how we want to worship, right? So, but the Taliban today are completely free to do what they want to do. Because while we were there, they feared us. And we kept, if people would just look back, you can see that in 20 years, we didn't have another 9/11, right? We had no major terrorist attack on the United States during 20 years because our guys and gals kept them at bay. They deterred, they disrupted their plans, they eliminated the threats when they could. They helped train the Afghan forces. They were going to turn it over at some point, but it never happened that happened because they took them all out. Just when we were getting there, then they started drawing down in 2014 because of the campaign promise, Obama's campaign promise to do that. So he did it, left about 84,000 troops from 100,000 at the peak of the war in 2010. And that's a big reduction. And you're talking about a very big country, right, with with little cells all over the place. So they put a great big deterrent on war fighters mobilizing, bringing in weapons, staging attacks, you know, conducting suicide missions those 20 years. Yes, they still did it, but it was much reduced because we were there.
And here we were, Jeannie, we were there for 20 years, and the Trump administration did want to withdraw from Afghanistan, but there was a way to do that. And the Biden administration chose to do it just in reverse order on August 30th, 2021. And this is probably one of the most embarrassing moments in our country's history because it was so blatantly done wrong. I mean, it baffles the mind how we withdrew, left troops there, 13 military individuals killed. We left $85 billion worth of equipment there with exposure of Air Force bases that were close to China. Why, Jeannie, why was it done the way it was done?
Well, I can't answer that because I think it was a disaster. But I can address these things. In 20 years, you get to know your enemy, or you should, right? We knew this enemy was never going to go away. We knew that we could stop them, we could deter them, because we did. We did win a lot of small battles over there, which they never talk about. They don't even talk about Afghanistan anymore. But we did do that. And this enemy is a very patient, determined enemy. They're never going to stop, okay? As long as they have the freedom to organize and mobilize and rejuvenate, they're going to do it because they are never going to stop with what they want to happen. So taking all of our troops out of that country, I think, I don't really, you know, I've never talked to President Trump about this, but I don't see, it's my understanding that peace accord, number one, that was never going to be honored, in my opinion, by these terrorists, okay? They were going to do anything or say anything to get foreign troops out of their country. But if there was, you know, it's my understanding that Trump said if they wouldn't have followed the agreement, then, you know, we would have been back in there. But to me, to give them freedom. Now, there was an article put out by UPI in February that the United Nations Security Council is saying that Al-Qaeda has 8 new training camps over there. They're teaching kids in these schools to be war fighters in the north and east of the country. They've got safe houses for insurgent leaders, Al-Qaeda leaders that have contacts with Iran. This is the United Nations Security Council that UPI wrote a story about. And so why should they, you know, they don't have any chains on them except sanctions, and that doesn't seem to be doing much of anything because, to me, the Taliban are terrorists, and they're never going to change overnight. They are what they are.
So we need a change in leadership to put them in their place, do we not?
I think we need a leadership that has some awareness of what terror is. I mean, after 20 years, wouldn't you know? You should know. You should know what kind of an enemy you're fighting and that it's not just in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and you don't give them the keys and you don't give them $85 billion worth of state-of-the-art equipment and you don't leave your military there.
Right.
You know, everything was done in the reverse order. And it just put our own men and women in uniform in harm's way.
Yeah, no, it put a lot of people and Afghan allies that are still there hiding so the Taliban don't find them. One of the biggest bones I have to pick is I have a lot of bones to pick about how the war ended because I have talked to so many war fighters over the years that now they're asking themselves, why did I what did I do over there? What did it mean? And they saw their buddies die. They saw them, their legs blown off. And they're going, what was it all for? If it's going to end like that, you're just going to turn it back over to the same enemy we were fighting all those years. And that saddens me greatly because they think their service didn't mean anything. And it did. It meant a lot.
Their service was not in vain by any stretch. But what do you think their takeaway is after 20 years of war in Afghanistan?
Well, I have talked to a few of them while filming my documentary series, and they some of them struggle with meaning to their service there. I've had people come up to me and you know, thank me for telling the stories because nobody's telling their stories. And, you know, if you're going to, by telling their stories, it's coming from them, and they're telling me and telling the world when I get it out there what it's like for them. We've got, you know, 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old people over there facing the worst criminal and murderers on the planet. And they're just coming out of high school or, you know, from all walks of life, and they're going over and doing this incredibly hard, dirty job. And something, and then they come back with all those experiences locked in their brain, and you know, and they have trouble processing that in over to transition, you know, to civilian life, and it's a problem in our country.
Well, I think what we see here, Jeannie, is, you know, what occurred during the attack of Camp Bastion and the heroic, selfless acts of these U.S. Marines. It inspires us to do better, to be better. I wish we had more time. I know that this is all captured in your book, Triumph Over the Taliban, the untold story of U.S. Marines' courageous fight to save Camp Bastion. And I so appreciate what you shared earlier about John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And certainly they've been doing that for us. We honor them. We say thank you. We will not forget. And that's captured in Triumph Over Taliban. Folks, you can learn more at Jeannie's website, patriotprofiles.com. Jeannie McKinney, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
God bless you.
You too, Chris.
You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit-made Bible Strong.